I'm Nadine. Or is she off of there?
She's not off.
And I'm Patty.
We are just breathing. Breathe with us.
Start. Welcome. I am Catherine, and I am part of the youth group that will be doing the majority of the presentation today. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background. We welcome you, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, or family structure. We welcome you no matter your age or your inabilities or your abilities. Later in the service, we will invite visitors and guests and returning friends to introduce yourselves so that we might get to know you better. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services. They are presented by a Prairie member, by a member of the wider community, or by our minister, Sandy. Today's service is our annual Day of the Dead service, where we will be remembering those who have died. So we have a few announcements. Mary Mullen has 10 Norway spruce tree seedlings to give away. If you would like a tree, please talk to Mary. This is from Sandy. Please join Reverend Sandy after the service for our second town hall meeting discussion. Although there is no agenda or fixed topic, we might consider talking about growth and where Prairie wants to go in its next 50 years. We will be gathering here in the meeting hall between 11:30 and 11:45. And then Patty Stockdale has an announcement.
Hi. Patty, there's a mic here.
Oh, no. Well, I was just going to do it from my chair. But
No.
I guess I'm going to do it with a microphone. I want to thank everybody for turning in their pledges. We're almost there. We're at $82,000, $83,000 out of $104,000. And I want to ask a special thing, which may or may not be possible for some, is that I think we're going to have a shortfall in our fundraising. So if you have a little bit more space in your pockets to like maybe increase your pledge, I would certainly appreciate that so we can have our budget for this coming year. All right, thanks.
This morning's offering will be shared with Beacon House, and more information and other announcements are on your order of service. And now we will have a prelude.
Ancestors' breath.
ancestors bred in the voice of the body.
Thank you all for that song. All right, our opening words this morning are "Death Sets a Thing Significant" by Emily Dickinson, read by Jesse Gorse.
Death sets a thing significant. The eye had hurried by, except a perished creature, and treat us tenderly. To ponder little workmanships in crayon or in wool with "This was last her fingers did, industrious until the thimble weighed too heavy, the stitches stopped themselves, and then 'twas put among the dust upon the closet shelves. A book I have, a friend gave, whose pencil, here and there, had notched the place that pleased him. At rest, his fingers are. Now, when I read not, for interrupting tears, obliterate the etchings, too costly for repairs."
Please turn to our first hymn, number 350 in the SLT, "The Ceaseless Flow of Endless Time." We are only going to be doing verses 1 and 2, so not verse 3. Stand as you are willing and able. Welcome Rachel and Aaron to light our chalice.
But when you are gone, who remembers your name? Who keeps your flame? And who tells your story? And that's from Hamilton.
We will now have a moment of silent meditation. So I have a brief presentation before we get to the sharing part of the service. The UU principles give us a framework of how to live our lives, treat others and the earth kindly, search for truth and justice, and build democracy. But the principles are only focused on what we do during our lives. As Unitarian Universalists, we consider beliefs and feelings about death as more a personal question that we answer on our own. Unlike many major religions, there is little guidance on what happens after death. There is no distinct idea of a heaven or hell, no promise of reincarnation with the eternal goal of getting closer to nirvana. Instead, death is for us a personal experience, with each person having their own beliefs, and as a result, it can be challenging to talk about with each other. Dealing with death can be isolating, disorienting, and confusing for us as UUs. But by drawing upon the Mexican tradition of Dia de Muertos, where communities come together to celebrate and remember those who have passed, we can support those of us who have lost someone. While we may not stay up all night, sweep the graves of our ancestors, and build altars for them as they do in the traditional way of celebrating, we can join together to remember those who have passed. So no matter what you believe about what happens to the dead, join us in celebrating the lives of the people who are no longer with us. So please join Jesse in responsive reading number 722. Let them get their books out. There you go.
I think continually of those who were truly great.
Who from the womb remembered the soul's history through corridors of life, were the hours of suns, endless and singing.
Whose lovely ambition was that their lips, still touched with fire, should tell of the spirit clothed from head to foot in song. What is precious is never to forget the essential delight of the blood drawn from ageless springs breaking through rocks in worlds before our earth.
Never to deny its pleasure in the simple morning light, nor its gray evening demand for love.
Never to allow gradually the traffic to smother with noise and fog the flowering of the spirit.
Near the snow, near the sun, in the highest fields, see how these veins are fed by the waving grass, and by the streamers of white cloud, and whispers of wind in the listening sky.
The names of those who, in their lives, fought for life, who wore at their hearts the fire's center.
Born of the sun, they traveled.
Now we invite people to come to the front and share about someone who has died. If you have a photo or memento, please feel free to bring it up with you, and you can light a candle from that one. Please start putting the candles in the back of the pan so that no one gets hurt. So we can form two lines down the sides of the aisles and alternate going up. Is the microphone on?
Grandfather. This is the Quaker branch of my family. My grandfather's name was Levinus Painter, a forbidding name, and he was a sort of a stern man. He was a Quaker minister, and he also worked for the American Friends Service Committee. And the things that I'd like to say in his honor today are that I remember very strongly how he was at one point adopted and honored by the Seneca Nation of New York State for his work in lobbying for Native Americans and for their land rights. He also worked for people who had been left out for resettlement of miners in West Virginia. He worked with Palestinians bringing food and relief at the time of the war in Israel, and or the forming of Israel, before it was Israel. And he worked for the people of Kenya and supported the mission work in schools and hospitals there. And I had the honor of traveling with him once in Kenya. My mother, Mariama Hibbert, she was a minister's wife, and she ran the church school. She ran the family with five kids. We froze and canned all of our fruits and vegetables for the year. In between that, we had great, and she involved all of us, in between that, we had great times playing games, going on nature walks. She loved telling us about the spring flowers and naming them. And her volunteer work after the children's programs at church were done and so forth was with the United Nations Work Organization and with Servas, an international travel host group. And she was on national boards for those many years. And we used to only get visits when she was coming through on the bus to her board meetings in D.C. So anyway, these two.
Good morning. Thursday was such an amazing day for us, and it was filled with death, and it was fascinating that it is that we had the Day of the Dead today. I had the wonderful privilege about being with my former mother-in-law in the hospital this week. She stayed awake for 24 hours one of the days, I think because she was afraid to go to sleep, knowing that the end was near. She told countless stories of her life, little girl growing up on the farm in Ripon, a peace vigil in the 70s, marching from Bascom Hall to the Capitol singing "Give Peace a Chance." She was such a beautiful woman, an artist, and she was loved and remembered by many. Her artwork is even in Madison at Olbrich Park. There's a huge stone triptych that she did about 15 years ago. And I was just so happy to be part of the family, since I'm not officially part of the family, but I didn't get kicked out because of divorcing Peter. I got to hang out with my beautiful sisters-in-law and my beautiful mother.
When did she pass away?
Thursday night. And this is her. Peter and I were Mr. and Mrs. Santa Claus for the autism clinic. And Mary is in the picture, and Peter's sister-in-law, too.
Mary Mickey.
And earlier this week, Barbara and I received notice of the passing of another friend, a very alcoholic man who you don't have to think hard to figure that he drank himself to death. We were not like his best friends, but we were his friends. And we sort of wondered if anybody would attend, as he has offended so many people over the course of his life. He is someone that is responsible for the Supreme Court case that he lost that allows the police to arrest you if you're sitting in your car but the motor's not running and you're passed out. He was very open about his issues. He talked about how many, you know, often he went to the slammer for OWIs. And as far as I know, he never hurt anybody driving the car, which I think is a very good thing. But the thing that really grabbed our attention for Thursday's ceremony was that it was to be held in the Speakeasy Lounge in Barrowville. And so we looked at each other and we said, how can we not go? We'll have a story to tell for the rest of our lives. Now, his partner in life had about 300 people show up for her ceremony, and Walter had about 30 of us. And what I will tell you is, as documented by the stains on the back of my of the program for his funeral, is that it was coffee that was sloshed when I was shaking someone's hand.
I don't have anything to put up here because I realized after I started thinking that I had already packed it away. we're busy throwing and packing and stuff. I wanted to speak a little bit about my husband's uncle, Gerald Rodell, who passed November 9th of last year. So it's been a long time. And when he passed, he had been ill for a very long time with some kind of bone cancer, I guess it was, which sounded really terrible. Yeah, but he was Lee's birth mother's last remaining sibling, and he was 89 and was a veteran of World War II. He had managed to enlist right before the war ended in 1945. So he got in on that little World War II thing, and but never saw any combat, I don't think, and. But he was a wonderful guy, and he was very devout Catholic, just a real mensch, a real, really good all-around person, and he is very missed.
I'm taking this day to honor my dad, Samuel Heisman, who passed away about 3 years ago. And I really feel like his sense of humor is still with me. And I remember when we were little kids, he would tell us jokes that went over our heads. But then we'd remember him later in life, like a typical joke I just thought of the other day is when I was about like maybe 10 years old, my sister was 8 years old, we'd go on a road trip, and my dad would say, "If you guys are good, you could watch me eat an ice cream cone later." You can imagine it was... We didn't really appreciate that until later. So. It's kind of funny. Kind of things like that just pop into my head. So.
Well, I'm thinking of my sister this week, and I didn't bring any object or picture, but I have a demonstration. My sister died in 1998 at the age of 54, and she was the hugger in our family. She was the one most likely to give me a hug, and it was a good one. It wasn't a 2-second hug. It was a little longer, and you were very good. She often rocked while we hugged, and I read somewhere that a hug, in order to release the oxytocin, needs to be 20 seconds. Which is a very long time, which was not as long as we hugged. But I thought that was good enough. I can feel the oxytocin, Robin. And so that is the thing I'd like to remember about her. And the thing that I miss those hugs. Her name was Alana.
I want to honor two of my good friends who died this year. One was executive director of the mental health center I worked for in Illinois, and he was a very good man. His name is Floyd Cunningham, and he was absolutely above board in all of his decision-making and goodwill toward others and trying to help and managing a mental health center, even back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, was, on a shoestring. And a Unitarian, and so he was a friend and a mentor and a coworker and all kinds of wonderful relationships that I remember. And another person who also worked at the same mental health center, Ken Starbuck, and he was an adult counselor for years, and he was also a Unitarian in my church down there. And member of a small group ministry we had going for about 9 years, where we would meet once a month and someone in one of our homes and just talk about an issue or a question. Anyway, another person who was a friend and a coworker and a person that I admired very much and learned a lot from, and both of those men, just stellar human beings.
My husband, Mike, was a member of this congregation so many years ago. He died in 1970. What? 88?
98.
98. Okay, he died in 1998. To me, that's not very important part of this, but yeah, I'd like to be accurate about it. He was somebody that I grew up with. His family moved to our street and across the street from us when we were kids, and our mothers, I think, always had the hope that we would end up together, and we did. He was one of the kindest people I ever knew, and he was a wonderful husband and wonderful father. He was a scientist who did good work that I'm sure must have helped people, and I'm shaking. I think I'll just stop. He was worth knowing. I think a lot of people here would agree with me.
My mom died 4 months ago, and I miss her.
This is my father, David Proud. He was in the U.S. Army Air Force in World War II, prisoner of war. Had quite a story to tell, and 50 years later, he finally told it, much to the appreciation of all his family. So anyway, he died last January at age 94. After several years of advancing dementia. I have to say that the last, I don't know, 10 or 12 years were the best times for us. I finally gave up a lot of stories I had about what a rotten father he was. And we became best buddies and spent a lot of good times together and went on some trips and so on. And it was hard to see someone who was so sharp and such a leader in so many ways and during his life, decline mentally. But he was, other things came out. He was a very loving person, although he had trouble expressing that love.
Two women who were brave enough to marry curry men that I remember today. One is my Aunt Jin, who I actually, it's been in the last year or so that she died, and I was able to get to her funeral and reconnect with some cousins and celebrate her life. She had a lot in common with my mom, who I'm realizing as I was sitting in the back, I now am embarking on, so half of my adult life, she was with us, and half of my adult life she has been gone, so died about 15 years ago. And both of them, I'll just speak to my mom. I attribute her example in being a big city girl in a very small town in Iowa, married to someone who was an amazing guy. My dad's fantastic, but had a pretty prominent role in the community, and she had some pretty strong values that she had to figure out how to voice in an effective way without bristling people, and she did that incredibly well and incredibly gracefully and in a very strong but quiet way. So kind of every day try to live by her example and light this for her. My mom's name was Peg, and my aunt was Virginia. We called her Jin.
Today I'm remembering Ori Laux, who was an early Prairie member, and then they moved away and then came back at the end of their lives. And Ori, as many of you know, was a professor of ecology and a national figure in the environmental movement. And every summer or so, Eleanor, his wife, would say, well, we're going up to the cabin. We're going up to the cottage in Canada. And I thought, oh, well, that's nice, and so on. But I really didn't understand the impact of that for them. And I think this is true of so many people that we know. You know, their lives are a lot richer. And sometimes you hear things in memorial services, and you think, oh, I wish I'd known that person better. They gave me this book called Surviving Four Migrations, The Laux of Haliburton. And Haliburton is a county in Ontario. And this is a book that Ori wrote, most of it, and Eleanor edited and typed it up and so on. And it's a fantastic story. And in this I learned that this cottage and so on was on the land where Ori grew up. And his great-grandfather had been given that land when Ontario was opening up. Then his grandfather farmed it, and his father farmed it, and Ori grew up there. And he did things like cutting ice in the lake and felling trees and so on. It was a hard scrabble farm. But then none of Ori's siblings and so on wanted the land, so it was divided up by the father, and everyone had a cottage, built a cottage overlooking the lake. So going back was really, you know, much more a deeper kind of thing. And then I read more of this book, and his family history is just fantastic, because it comes from a group of French Huguenots who were persecuted and went to Saxony for many years. Then in 1750 or so, they came to colonial America, and they settled in New York. They were loyalists, though. So when the Revolutionary War occurred, their farm was taken away from them. I didn't know we did that, but we did, apparently. So they fled to Canada. They lived in along the St. Lawrence River. And then when Ontario opened up, they were given this land. And that's where Ori is buried, in this little village cemetery with hundreds of Lauxes. And his father said, he gave him the name Ori. I was wondering, boy, this is a strange name. And his father said, well, there's so many Lauxes here that if you had a name like with O, you would get your mail. Anyway, Ori died about a year ago, and I'm remembering him.
I didn't really come very well prepared, but as I hear these, because I, being as old as I am, almost everybody from my past is gone, but I have a lot of wonderful people in my present also, and future, I hope. I'm remembering my younger brother's wife. She just died about 2 years ago, but she gradually lost her mind, and she was lost to us for a good many years before her death. But we had a wonderful memorial celebration for her just this year, and so I had a chance to hear so much about her. She married my brother when they were my brother was in the Merchant Marine, and she was in college at Oberlin, and they got married. After he got out of the service, they went to Oberlin together. And early in their marriage, we took a driving vacation out west with our baby, who was 6 months old, and they came along, and it was just the most closest experience for us all to get to know them so well. And it was close in more ways than one, because we would take turns taking care of the baby, and then the other three would go off and do something. And when my brother and husband and I chose to do something, it was climbing the Grand Teton, which we didn't quite succeed in getting to the peak, because my brother and I kind of chickened out on this little narrow ledge, and John couldn't go on alone. So, but I do remember trying to sleep in a two-person tent with these two large men. Fortunately, I was in the middle, so I stayed warm. But we had many good experiences, and my brother deteriorated at a fairly young age from alcoholism, and he had been a brilliant Foreign Service officer, but that's one of the occupational hazards of Foreign Service, is too much alcohol, and he had no resistance to that. He resigned before he was fired, and they divorced. And she continued to love him, but she couldn't stand to be with him. So anyway, she was, by her choice, she was cremated, and her ashes were put in the same vault with his. So they were reunited after death. She was not particularly a believer, and I don't know about my brother, but it was a very moving service, and I've probably said enough. My brother was Max Hodge, a Foreign Service officer, and she was Virginia Davis Hodge. And I'm sorry, I don't have a picture.
How about a candle?
Do you want a candle? Pardon? Do you want a candle? Of course. I think I like one for my brother too, because he was a good brother. We had a lot of good times together growing up.
Here's a picture, and this is not my mother, but it was done by my mother. She was not a rich or famous artist, but she went back to college when I was in school, and so she helped inspire me, I suppose, and she died a little over a year ago. And the house was sold, the house that she'd lived in for over 60 years and that I grew up in. And that was sold about a few months later. So it's been about a year now, and it was just last week that I heard over the internet that the house that was bought was turned into an art gallery. And this weekend there's a show. So I just thought I'd say that.
Aww.
remembering my grandfather, my mother's father, who passed away a long time ago now, 20 years ago or more. And I think so often of him, it's hard to even quite grasp. He lived with us for quite a while when I was a child. And even when he wasn't living with us, he was coming over once a week and playing cards with us. He was not a very emotionally connected person. He was pretty obsessive compulsive. And he used to, he was writing his autobiography all of his life. Would lose a big chunk of it in a move and then would just start on in and write again. I finally turned his autobiography over to my cousin to who, like, see what you can do with this. It's about 4,000 type pages. And he never finished it, actually. But he would read large sections of it to us. And his voice is just in my head. So many things that he has said, so many quotes from his autobiography that I repeat, they're like little, everyone has these little catchphrases, and I've got so many of his. He was born in the Ukraine and emigrated at age 7, Jewish. His father fled, he was going to be murdered probably. He was too uppity for his neighborhood. And when they got to St. Louis, you know, they still spoke in, you know, Ukrainian and Russian and all that. And often in my grandfather's autobiography, which, by the way, his name was used to be Meyer, but at emigration, the customs officer just changed all the kids' names to ones that he knew, so he became Max. Max Rader, which he always joked that he was Maximilian Robespierre Rader. But anyway, a lot of humor, this man, tons of humor. But anyway, in his autobiography, he had lots of quotes that had accent and words from other languages. And one of the ones I was thinking about just recently was they kept geese and other animals in their yard, and the neighbor complained. You can tell me if I get this story wrong, Mom. And what they said to the neighbor, what his father said to the neighbor was, "You no luck, moof." And that phrase, "You no luck, moof," is one of my little resonating things. So there are many ways to be remembered, and my grandfather's phrases resonate in my head.
I want to remember my mom, who died a year ago in June, because of course I wasn't organized to do it last year, to when it would have been more appropriate. And I thought I should do this because she loved a party, particularly anything that was in her honor. So I thought, I'll do this for you, Mom. She was, to me, a remarkable person. I think we all think that about our parents for the most part. She was a pioneer in her era. She worked from the time we were young children. She was on the field staff for McCall's. She had a college degree, I think was the only one of her sisters who did, and she would do publicity stunts, I guess. I can remember we were in one of the first malls that opened outside of the Twin Cities, the Roseville Mall, and she was doing demonstrations of Scotch Guard on us. Spill! Look at that clip. Then she'd go back and write a report for the magazine about how many people were there. She was a journalist. She worked for the university. She had 6 children. She was not great. She was not really into housekeeping or cooking, my brothers would say. I thought it was fine. And like I think Dan was saying about his dad, she had Alzheimer's at the end of her life. And what was saddest to me about that was that her grandchildren would remember her more that way than the very vibrant, talented person that she had been throughout her life. That was saddest to me. But she managed, you know, to continue to have a party kind of wherever she went, even in assisted living, and had, I think, some quality of life until the end. And I miss her.
I want to remember David Strom, my wife's brother, who died tragically when he was about 18. And he was adventurous. He had just driven across the country with a tent in his car. And he made a knife from a with a forge. He was a punk rocker when he was like 16. I think he would have been a wonderful uncle for my kids. And and he died like Halloween night in New Orleans. So light a candle for him.
I just thought I'd do a quick remembrance of all the wonderful members here who have passed. There's a few that I remember. Warren Hagstrom, Norma Briggs, and Galen Smith, but I know I'm missing out a lot of people. And so I thought we would think about some of these people as well.
Well, I think today I'll remember my parents, my mother, Mary Kay Miller, and my father, Norbert Miller. My mother came from Kentucky, from the Louisville, Kentucky area, and she played sports when she was a high school kid. But she never got to do that with us because she had to be the housewife and the mother, and there were seven of us kids. And my father didn't believe in taking care of kids. Well, he would read stories to us, and he would also take me when I was the oldest, so he would take me along for he was a minister, and he'd take me on his visits to the parishioners. And I really loved that because sometimes he would take me to some place where there was a horse, another child like me that we could go horseback riding, so that was always fun. And I got to see a lot of different homes in Waseca and Eastman, Wisconsin, which is in southwestern Wisconsin. And some of them were just, unpainted floorboards and outhouses and wood stoves and things like that. It was that era. We'd go out on the gravel roads and we'd go out to these farms way out on the ridge or in the valley, wherever they were. My mother was very, very organized. She was the first person in her family to go to college. And her mother, she always told a story about how her mother grew up on a very, 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 very poor farm in Indiana, which was so poor that the kids had to pull the plow. And so her mother thought it would be a very good idea if her daughter got an education. So my mother became a teacher. And she taught in Kentucky for a while, and then she went to North Central College in Naperville, Illinois, where she met my father. My father was also a farm boy. We had a twin brother, and they grew up together and did farm work and everything. But my father was born during the era where the flu was taking people. People were dying like flies. And the story he told is he decided to become a minister if his life would be spared, and his life was spared, and he became a minister all his life. I wanted to say my mother was very organized. With seven kids, she had to be in with a husband that didn't want to take care of us except sometimes, take me along with him. So we all had chore lists, and we all did canning with my mother. We had an assembly line. When we did the wash, we had I had my job of taking clothes, the wringer washer and all that, and putting them up on the line. And I didn't realize how important that was till I met people in my adult life who had not had an organized, didn't have any organization in their family life. And we had three meals a day together, and we had conversation because both of my parents believed in conversation. And they let us disagree with them.
I mean, they kind of encouraged us to disagree with them. And so I didn't realize how important that was till I met people that weren't allowed to disagree at all with their parents, and who then were felt like they were under the thumb of their parents their entire lives afterward, even after they left. My mother managed to, besides having seven kids, she managed to become an oil painter, like Grandma Moses. She didn't have any training, and she didn't know perspective or anything like that. But she got us all involved in that, too. I don't remember her doing any oil paintings, but she did about 25 or 30 of them. So she must have done them while we were all in bed, because she could stay up late. We're night owls, all of us. So that's a legacy that she left to us. But when Life magazine in, what year was it, 1953, I guess, was going to do a story on called Harvest of Arts in the Midwest, they came to the University of Wisconsin and found out about the rural art shows, regional art shows, I think they're called now. And they found all these millers who were in the booklets, you know, who had exhibited at these rural art shows. So that was us, because my mother had got us all involved. And so they came to take a photo of us, and we got a page in Life magazine. And that's where I learned that, you know, you can't always depend on the press. They don't always know what, you know, they kind of gather something, but they don't quite get the story right. They said we painted, the whole family painted every day. No, we did not. We didn't paint every day, but as I told you, I don't even remember when my mother painted all these pictures that she did. But anyway, I realized that, you know, sometimes they don't get the story right. It's not their fault. It's just they don't. And then I want to say for my father, he had many, many hobbies, and I know that I got a lot of them from him. Photography was one. He took us out on the aggregate piles by the Mississippi River to pick agates, so we learned how to look very closely at the ground. I found lots of money as a result of that. And he raised Angora rabbits for money, and we helped pluck the fur, but most of the time we had to cut it because they got mats, because, you know, you couldn't. We had about 125 rabbits. And then you got $16 a pound for the Angora wool if it was the kind you plucked out, and it was only $4 if you had the mats. And but then the market dropped out because I think synthetics came. And let's see, he would not raise vegetables. That was women's work. But he raised flowers. And he learned about a chemical, colchicin, which can change the genetics of seeds. So he raised gloxinias in the house, and then he advertised in Flower Grower magazine for the seeds, and those seeds are like pepper. And so he would sell packets of them, and we kids would count out these little pepper-like seeds, five of each kind, you know, into these little bowls. And, well, there was a lot more I could tell, but anyway, my mother was Mary Kay Miller, and my father was Norbert Miller, and that's who I'm remembering today.
Thank you to everyone who shared. Al and Eileen will be reading the names of past Prairie members who have died.
Let's see if we can get this mic to work for two.
Where's
two.
The other mic?
That would be better. Since he knows we have to be close up. Deceased Prairie folks, Ruth has labeled this. Ran Cotley.
Before I had a name, I just want to make a comment. Every one of these people, unfortunately, I've known. And the stories we could tell about each of them. Roland Parrish.
Avis Parrish.
Bill Caldwell.
Jana Osteros.
Rebecca Clark.
Ted Clark.
Betsy Roberts.
Lois Hagstrom.
John Dorney.
Les Lyons.
Dorothy Weatherby.
Marvin Werpel.
Mary Jane Werpel.
Carol Dopp.
John Grinrod.
Shirley Grinrod.
Mike Sheehy.
Sydney Mannering.
Judy Perlman.
Dick Bonzer.
Odell Taliaferro.
Hazel Taliaferro.
Henry Pratt.
Paula Elkins.
David Carson.
John Smale.
Carl Thompson.
Marion Thompson.
Tim Fast.
Lee Bullen.
Alice Bullen.
Dan Willard.
Ray Muntz.
Mary Lou Muntz.
Betty Jallings.
Jack Jallings.
Rachel Siegfried.
Hermine Davidson.
Charlie Davidson.
Pat Cotley.
Arnie Clay.
George Calden.
Dalita Chaprue.
Dave Zackham.
Jack Birong.
Mana Birong.
Nancy Garst.
And we were not sure if Ed Garst was a member or not. Ned. So we're going to add Ned also. And then Barbara Carson.
Dave Johnson. He'll come. Yeah, the orders are not necessarily accurate here. Bob Siegfried.
Bob Kale.
Lilo Kale.
Fran Ramica.
Susan Drapkin Vaughn.
Gordon Cunningham.
Pat Watkins.
Mary Lou Deal.
Louise Vogel.
Betty French.
Frank French.
Barbara Rames.
Megan Kroger Christensen.
Dave Johnson.
Galen Smith.
Bob Durkin.
Norma Briggs.
Lori Bond.
Ori Lauks.
Theron Caldwell Reese.
Orton Gray.
Hugh Iltis.
Warren Hagstrom.
Laura Smale.
Did we miss any names? Does anyone?
It was here. Let us know if you think of anyone we missed. Thank you.
Now is the time for the offering, which will be shared this month with the Beacon House. The ushers will pass the basket while we welcome Dan and Rachel up.
Without all, live with.
Now we will take a moment to introduce guests and visitors. If you are here for the first or second time, or haven't attended for a while, we invite you to introduce yourself and say what brought you here. Please wait for the microphone.
I'm Catherine's dad. I show up rarely. This is what's called a Chris sighting. So.
Please turn to our final hymn, number 324 in SLT, "Where My Free Spirit Onward Leads." Please stand as you are willing and able. Our closing words, number 684, will be read by Rachel Hughes.
The blessing of truth be upon us. The power of love direct us and sustain us. And may the peace of this community preserve our going out and our coming in, from the time forth until we meet again.
Thank you all for coming today. Please come to the front and see the artifacts and try some of the pendant worth those brought in by Ruth. You're all invited to join us for coffee and conversation.
Thank you.